new people, new things. Like, it might be fun, and I was thinking on this cruise, we're going to have a lot of time. You know, I can get why it's a perfect time to have him elaborate on a few things.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
I'd be sitting there doing, you know, on
that
the deck
chair.
That would
be great.
So, I gave you a bunch of tapes.
Okay, this is tape five.
This is tape five. Okay, let's go.
We're still
I'm
with
ready.
Barry Paris, and we're still on the 28th.
With the relieved Barry. Oh, 28th of September.
I asked Barry, and I asked you again, that when the tables are reversed with critics, but that there are there critics who you respect, and even if they give you a sort of a iffy critique, that you can learn, do you learn from them? Or?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. And the best example is the meanest critic in the United States, namely John Simon, who is absolutely loathed by basically all actors in New York theater, and most people, because he is terribly mean. On the other hand, he is usually right. And he reviewed Louise Brooks' book, which I showed you there, and of all places, the Washington Post. He writes for New York Magazine and other publications in New York, but for some reason, the Washington Post hired him to review Louise Brooks, and he gave it. It is not a rave review. I cite it and him without prejudice of the fact that he raved about the book. But what he did was to give a typically brutal but fair review of the book. And I like him a lot. I wrote him and told him so, and after we became friends, we've gone out to dinner a few times in New York, and he writes wonderful, mean, bitchy, great letters. So, again, this is an example of somebody not only I admire, but professionally, but who has, you know, I've had the good fortune now to become sort of a friend of because of this connection. And the other two things that I handed you, one is an unbelievable review of Louise Brooks in the New Republic before it got nailed for having fake writers. This was in 89, and it is a 6-page review of Louise Brooks. So, to my knowledge, they have never devoted 6 pages to, I don't know, I don't think any book review, certainly not to a book review of a film person. And it, too, is not entirely positive by any means, but it is so intelligent, so well written. And the third thing is a review of the Audrey Hepburn book by Wayne Kostenbaum, who appeared in England, that is astonishing in the intelligence of it. It is a very favorable review, but if you read it, and you'll make copies of it, it is an essay, it's a true essay, which is what a good review should be, of including a critique of the book, but the critics inspired, the book inspired the critic to do an original essay on the subject of Audrey Hepburn, in this case on her relationship to women. It is amazing. You can see it's very long. It was in the London...
Does he think she was a lesbian?
You'll have to read it and find out. He's a famous gay critic, and famous gay critics almost always think everybody's a lesbian or, you know, homosexual. He starts out with that as kind of a premise, but by the end he takes it to a very objective conclusion that is not exactly what she's a lesbian. Very hard to explain because it's a very in-depth, intelligent thing. You'll read it and make your own opinion. Well, you know what? You could read out loud a couple of those little yellow sections,
okay,
and if you want to get it on the tape.
All right, the first one.
You got to get close to the tape recorder.
I have such a terrible voice. The new biography of Audrey Hepburn by Barry Paris, a writer already praised for his books on Louise Brooks and Garbo, is an acute, tender-hearted, and entertaining dish of Hepburn facts. More important, well, he goes on to say how wonderful you are.
Yeah.
More important, he offers a grid for dream inquiries into star consciousness.
Mm.
Another highlighted part is, he talks about Edith Head. Is that what he's talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Head becomes a mother amorously alone with her genetic echo. I get it. Okay.
Isn't that amazing? Amorously alone,
yes,
with her genetic echo.
Yes.
Now, this man is a writer.
And this is Wayne Kostenbaum.
Wayne Kostenbaum in the...
London Review.
Okay.
London Review of Books. That's a very...
Book 9, 1897.
It's an incredible essay.
May I take those
London,
yeah,
mm-hmm, Review? Okay.
So, all this you brought upon yourself by the question of critics that I like and respect, and there are many. the trouble is there are more of them in England than there are here. And Louise Brooks got something like 67 reviews, but who's counting?
I was.
Most of them, well, they were split about 50-50 between the U.S. and England. When you think about that, the relative size of the country, the week I was in London for the issuing of the book there, in that 1 week there were 22 reviews of the book in London newspapers and magazines. In 1 week, 22. There were, like, in New York, 6 or 7. So, anyway, the Brits have a higher quality of criticism.
And they have a better use of the language.
That's for sure.
I mean,
amorously, I'm in love with the genetic echo.
Go
ahead. Well, are we still on this subject?
Yep.
One last little thing. Egocentric, I have to tell you. I had a semi-falling out with my editor editor of Louise Brooks was Robert Gottlieb, whom I adored. And when he went to the New Yorker in the middle of the thing, I inherited a second editor whom I didn't really, we got along all right. The book came out, but she and I, she wasn't all that good, and we didn't really love each other that much. And the point at which she really offended me, she was a perfectly good editor, actually, but she said at one point toward the end, we were saying this and that, and what do you, I said, well, I want to make this book what it's supposed to be. And she, well, what is it? You had to pick one word, what would you like the book overall to be, this life, this biography? And well, as a piece of writing and as a biography, and considering this gorgeous subject, I would like this book. I think the one word would be, and that I would try to characterize it, would be elegant. And she said, elegant? Well, that's about the last thing I would consider Louise Brooks as a subject, or she was just withering and dismissing that. And I was real offended. Also, indirectly, the writing, I meant. I wanted the writing. Well, I was real pissed and upset about that, kind of hurt, and blah, blah. And the book came out, and it was fine. And 6 months later, it came out in England. And 2 months later, the paperback came out in England, and they used, without any input from me at all, the quote on the front of the book, which I had not seen until that moment.
Elegantly and engrossingly written.
Sunday Times, and that's on the cover.
Yeah.
I had
no.
She was very cute.
I had no knowledge of that.
Yeah, but
that they were going to use that, and I didn't ever see the quote until it appeared there. And somehow it was such a vindicate. It was like it made everything all right. And a critic, I don't even know the guy's name, but of course I love him,
sure.
Or her, and it just made, it really helped me psychologically, not egocentrically, but psychologically. Somebody got it, and they put it on the cover.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Okay, that's the end of it. So I like something.
Okay, what I wanted to ask you, since you are such a people person, you have written books, biographies of people you never met. How does that feel?
I always felt bad about that. I had met Louise on the telephone only. I tried so hard to see her and get her to talk to me while she was alive, and she wouldn't. Even with all of my connections in the family, knowing her brother and her nephew, felt bad about that. Garbo, I think I've told you the sad story of I spent 2 years and had lined up a meeting through a mutual friend for May of 1990, and she died in April of 1990. That was heartbreaking. Audrey Hepburn, I was asked to do the book and basically agreed to do the book about 6 weeks before she died. Tony Curtis, thank God, I know and love and had a chance to be with. So yeah, it's upset, but on the other hand, a number of people have said, especially regarding Brooks, that it was probably very good that I didn't meet her because she was so alienating in general that I could have been turned off. She had 5 other potential biographers that she said yes to, and all of them ended up, hating her, and she fired them all, and then she wrote things, she told them it was terrible, it was disastrous. So sometimes it's better in terms of one's objectivity not to know the person. But the bottom line is I wish I had.
Okay, if you had one dream of what you, of one specific thing that you would like to do, what would it be? I mean, where money is no object, where...
A writing project.
Whatever, any unfinished business. Oh. You're very young for that, I understand.
Oh, I wish. My wish list.
Yes.
I want to go to the moon. I want to be one of the people. I do want to go to the moon. I want to be on the first... No, not the moon. That's kind of dull. I want to go to Mars.
Done.
They've been on the moon. Mars looks much more interesting to me. I really want to go to Mars. That won't happen. Writing project, you know what it would be? This is... I'm happy to say that my dream writing project is Franklin Pierce, the one
that's
for which I finally, after 25 years... got and have a contract and am working on. So that to me, because it's so bizarre and unlike anything I've ever done and has never been written about, is the dream project that I've worked on off and on privately for 25 years, and thanks to my agent and Vicki Wilson and Knopf, I'm going to do it. I am doing it. And that's a wonderful thing. That's very fortunate to be able to, you know, there are lots of writers who spend their lives trying to get a piece in the New Yorker, you know, or do a project like that that nobody wants. And nobody wanted that project for 20 years. I mean, I took that to 100 editors and publishing house. They would run screaming in the opposite direction. But finally, Vicki, you cannot forgive me. So, what more can I ask?
So do you have a hard side to you, a negotiating side, a side that perseveres, that you go...
Perseveres, yes. Negotiating, no.
Okay.
I am the greatest wimp about money and negotiating. No, thank God. That's why I have this mean, wonderful agent, Dan Strone, the William Morris Agency, who is vicious, and people hate him in the industry. They can't stand him because he's such a hard bargainer, and he's the perfect yang to my yin. He's, you know, I'm the good cop, he's the bad cop, and they tremble when they talk, and then they'll call to me and whine and complain. Well, he's sitting there, and I'll say, well, let me talk to him, maybe. So I get to do the role that I do, because I can't do tough very well. I try, whenever I try, it's obviously phony. Nobody believes it. Anybody calls my bluff, I collapse. Except political things.
Now, does your dad, who seems to be your hero, does he read all your stuff?
Every word. He insists on a subscription to the Post-Gazette.
Even. And then he critiques you, too? Or?
He lets me know what he thinks of things. Yes, he's read he's read all my books way before they're in print. He likes to get the galleys or the rough drafts. I've sent him parts of the book almost at the same time as I sent him to Knopf, just because he enjoys them. And he's a very good reader. He said a funny thing the other day when I sent him this. He said, I found some typographical errors. This is the Japanese version of the Audrey Hepburn book.
Oh, that's <wild. laughs>
And did I show you that?
No. Oh, that's amazing.
This is amazing. They have two different colors of the. I've never had a book in Japanese.
So they go backwards, like.
Yeah, you start
amazing.
At the back, like Hebrew,
yeah.
And it's gorgeous. And anyway, Wyoming said,
oh,
"Well, type, find
like
topic."
He's my kind of guy.
He's so funny.
Yes, absolutely.
And he lets me know. The only thing he's, basically, we agree on just about everything politically that I've mentioned. My brother, my older brother, and he famously do not get along and have diametrically opposite. My brother is a very conservative Republican, lifelong military industrial complex, aeronautical engineer, offensive weapons, helicopter, hates Clinton, hates, you know, Kennedy. He and my brother and father have always fought about pretty much everything. My father and I never, because it's almost like a grandfather, you know, he's 93 and I'm 50. My brother's 65. I was the baby in the accident. My father was always more like my grandfather, and my brother was always more like a father. But the only thing that he's disagreed with, he disagreed with my position on the Gulf War and Iraq, both the current crisis and the old, because he's got a very strong pro, anything that resembles pro-Israeli position, he is for, and anything that doesn't. So we disagreed on that, but that's about it.
Gabby, do you have any questions?
I make a motion that we convene in 1999. See what happens.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
And that we get, if we can, some tapes.
That would be perfect.
About his days in Pittsburgh, especially.
Okay, days in Pittsburgh. Wyoming. Well, that was
his sports stuff.
Most of his life. From the sports stuff.
From his point of view.
Okay.
Because that's what led us.
That's what he loves to talk about the most.
Right.
And that's what I grew up with.
Right.
Yeah, let's do that.
We do updates even on our older subjects. Because so many people, we interview them just as they're retiring from whatever made them interesting. And then they have second and third careers.
Sure.
Which are even more interesting. And it's just an ongoing thing.
Is there anything you want to tell us that we didn't ask you?
I think I've confessed everything. In a very Catholic fashion. More Catholic than Judaic. I just want to thank you both and say that it's been the most enjoyable set of debriefings that I've ever had. that I consider myself much more fortunate than Monica or Bill, the grand jury. If they'd had such sympathetic questioners, they wouldn't be where they are now. Anyway, thank you very much.